This is the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. It's Monday, November 19th. I'm John Wanamaker. There are 147 fewer wolves in northern Minnesota forests as of Monday morning. That's the final tally for the early wolf hunting season that ended Sunday. The DNR set a limit of 200 wolves for this part of the season. Hunters and trappers will get another chance when the second part of the season begins this Saturday. The number of wolves is higher than some wolf experts predicted. Tom Robertson has the story.
Many hunters got a wolf license just in case they saw a wolf while they were deer hunting. That makes Jim Gerald unusual. The 28-year-old Prior Lake man studied up on wolves and went after them deliberately. He spent the opening days of the wolf season hunting on remote state land west of Silver Bay. Gerald headed out to a deer stand in the cold pre-dawn hours of November 7th when he heard a single wolf howling in the distance.
It was a very foggy, misty morning. I almost felt like I was in a Sherlock Holmes novel.
Soon, another wolf joined in. Gerald used calls mimicking a fawn in distress. He followed that with some coyote calls. The woodland prey predator scene was designed to draw the wolves in. Their howling continued for 3 hours.
And then I heard some footsteps come from behind me from the east, and this wolf came coming in real quick, and from the time I saw him till the time I pulled the trigger was probably 5 or 10 seconds. I just swung around, and he was running through, and I shot.
A single shot to the heart dropped the wolf in its tracks. It was a large male weighing in at 117 pounds. Jim Gerald got a wolf license because he wanted the ultimate test of his hunting skills, the legal ability to kill a powerful predator.
It's tense. Your heart is racing. All your senses are kind of on edge. You're constantly scanning the woods, looking for movement, trying to listen, hear for things. It's just a very intense experience.
Gerald felt something else after he pulled the trigger that morning. Along with the joy of success, he felt a tinge of regret.
You're taking a life, and that's not something that you take lightly. But at the same time, if you're a hunter, it's your goal is to harvest an animal. So you do feel a sense of regret, a sense of sadness. I don't know any hunters that don't feel that.
Gerald has turned over the wolf carcass as required for DNR analysis. He'll have a taxidermist make a full-body mount once the pelt is returned. It will sit in Gerald's living room. Before the start of the early season, DNR wolf expert Dan Stark predicted hunters would only take about 70 wolves. That's well below the final tally.
You know, that was an informed guess based on what we've seen in other parts of the country where wolf hunting is mostly opportunistic to other big game hunting. And, you know, it was just something that we could base what we might see here.
Stark says the DNR will learn a lot more from biological data collected from wolf carcasses. When hunters turn in their postseason surveys, it will paint a more complete picture of the season, including where each wolf was killed and the methods hunters found successful. All of that information will be of interest to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The agency turned over management of wolf populations to the states of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan after the animal was removed from the endangered species list in January. Now the Fed's only role is to monitor those state wolf plans for the next 5 years. Laura Reagan is with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She says Minnesota's 400 wolf limit for this hunting and trapping season probably won't affect overall wolf population stability. Reagan says the hunt will bring in some valuable research data.
Now, this harvest is taking place during our post-delisting monitoring period, so it's going to allow us to really take a close look at how some of the management techniques, such as public harvest, how those might affect wolves while we're still monitoring them very closely.
DNR wildlife biologists are also conducting the first major population survey of wolves in 5 years. The survey will be completed in April. Tom Robertson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Bemidji.
Approximately 5 to 6% of Twin Cities teenagers are using steroids to increase muscle mass. Those findings come from a survey of more than 2,700 St. Paul and Minneapolis middle school and high school students. Rates of steroid use among boys and girls were similar. Steroid use is a felony without a prescription. The lead author of the University of Minnesota study says the findings are surprising, especially since some of the steroid users are only in the 7th and 8th grade. Researchers didn't ask students what motivated their steroid use. Researcher Marla Eisenberg says it's possible that kids are responding to a shift in body sizes and shapes that are portrayed in the media. She says male models and action figures today are much more muscular than a few decades ago. She says students also hear a lot about doping in professional sports and may think it's normal. Another report out of the University of Minnesota takes a look at how often students repeat grades in school, Tim Post reports.
The study examined data from grades 1 through 8 in nearly half a million schools nationwide from 2002 to 2009. It found first graders are most likely to be held back, between 3 and 4%, an average of one student per class. Minnesota has one of the lowest rates in the nation. Only 1% of students in first grade were held back. Study co-author U of M sociology professor John Robert Warren says this is the first time grade retention has been studied this way nationwide.
So there's never really been a way to compare states, one to another with respect to how often kids are repeating grades.
Warren hopes other researchers use the report's methodology to dig deeper into the pros and cons of holding students back.
That's education reporter Tim Post. 18 Minnesota school districts are among hundreds of applicants nationwide vying for $400 million in Department of Education grants. The grants, part of the Ed Department's Race to the Top program, will be awarded to districts that develop innovative approaches to teaching. One of the Minnesota districts in the running is Brainerd. Superintendent Steve Ridzidlo says he'd like to train teachers to better use technology to improve student learning.
Our district application makes a request of nearly $9 million to support some very intense staff training and development.
The Department of Education says 15 to 25 districts will be picked to receive the five-year grants. This is the NPR News Update, coming your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. SuperValue has announced it's freezing pay and cutting back on retirement plan contributions for some 10,000 non-union workers. The struggling grocery giant says officials continue to talk with several parties interested in buying some or all of SuperValue's 1,500 stores. The Eden Prairie-based company has one of the biggest blocks of private sector union employees in Minnesota, and union workers are thinking a lot about what their future could be under a new owner. Martin Moylan reports.
In Minnesota, SuperValue has more than 5,000 union workers at distribution centers and company-owned Cub Food stores.
We are watching who might be engaged or putting forward an offer on it.
Bertie Hess is director of special projects for Local 1189 of the United Food and Commercial Workers, one of the unions representing SuperValue workers in Minnesota.
Not only in Minnesota are we watching it, but all the other states where there are collective bargaining agreements in place.
Overall, SuperValue has union contracts covering some 84,000 employees nationwide. SuperValue owns and operates about 1,500 grocery stores across the country, including dozens of Cub Food stores in Minnesota. But the company has been taking on water for years. Analysts say SuperValue is a mid-market grocer that struggles to compete with high-end stores on service and quality or match the low prices of discounters like Walmart and Target. Over its past four fiscal years, SuperValue sales have fallen from $45 billion to $36 billion. And that tailspin is making SuperValue a tough sell.
Nobody's come to the plate and offered to buy everything.
John Dean is a grocery industry consultant.
I think that they'd like to hang on to some banners and divest others, but the ones they'd like to sell are the ones people don't want to buy.
It's a good bet that a lot of potential buyers would want to roll back union wages and benefits, bringing them in line with the labor costs that non-union Target and Walmart pay. A full-time union employee, for instance, at Cub Food stores in the East Metro, can make as much as $49,000 a year, not counting overtime pay. Workers also get pension and health benefits, plus the protection of an array of work rules set out in their contract. University of Minnesota business professor John Budd says a hedge fund or other investor group might be one type of buyer.
A worst-case scenario for the unions is SuperValue gets sold to some organization which just wants to make money off of the assets, make money by wringing costs out of the situation.
Other grocery chains are also potential buyers, but Morningstar analyst Michael Kira expects most of SuperValue's stores won't be attractive due to poor performance and eroding market share. And even at stores that perform well, Kira says the presence of unions can be a deal breaker.
Competitors that have the wherewithal to sort of finance that kind of deal
and really don't want to deal with union labor structures. Traditional supermarkets overlaid with a union cost structure tend to be a little more expensive.
SuperValu has been cutting prices to try to regain lost business. Bloomberg Industries analyst Jennifer Bartashis says that move was long overdue, especially for SuperValu's Acme stores on the East Coast.
At an Acme, both in Philadelphia and in New Jersey, prices were nearly 20% higher than a Walmart.
SuperValu's company-owned Cub food stores in Minnesota are considered good performers. In the Twin Cities, Cub is still number one with a 20% market share. But according to Arizona-based Metro Market Studies, Target, Walmart, and Sam's Club combined now command nearly 30% of metro area grocery sales. University of Minnesota labor professor John Remington says with so many powerful non-union competitors, SuperValu's union employees should realize
those union stores are their friends.
And Remington says unions need to help keep those stores competitive under current or new owners if they want to preserve the jobs of union members.
That's our business reporter Marty Moylan. And in other education news, two Minnesotans have been named Rhodes Scholars. Rupa Shenoy has more.
One student named is Wayzata native Georgiana Whiteley, a senior at Luther College. Whiteley spent a school term in Tanzania and later returned for an 8-week research trip to document healthcare there. She wants to earn a master's in medical anthropology, but she never planned to do that work at Oxford.
It's going to change the course of my life to be able to pursue medical anthropology at Oxford, and then under the name of Rhodes and the Rhodes Trust is something that I had never imagined possible before.
Rhodes Scholars are chosen for excellence in academics, athletics, and leadership potential. 32 U.S. students were chosen from a pool of 838 candidates. Clayton Aldern of Cedar was also named a Rhodes Scholar. Aldern studies neuroscience at Brown University.
That's our reporter Rupa Shenoy, and we wish all of the Rhodes Scholars the best of luck in their future endeavors. That's the NPR News Update for Monday, November 19th. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.